Good morning. Missy's been gone since Wednesday, so it's just good to be with people. I said one time, Travis and I were coming home from Siloam, and we were at the stop sign on Dogwood Street where 43 is coming around the corner, and I just said, "Is anything coming?" And he said, "No," and I went. And about the time I went, I thought, well, that was really crazy. He could have thought I was talking about something else. And I trumped that yesterday. Like I said, Merrick has been doing his own thing, and I've let the dogs out. Someone was knocking on the door, and I heard them start scratching, and I got all discombobulated on whether I was coming or going, and talked to the people. They left, let the dogs in, sat down, and I looked at one of the dogs, and I said, "Where's my phone?" And I wasn't using that voice you use to talk to your dogs. I was asking a legitimate question and expecting a legitimate answer. She did not get up and go to it, so I don't have smart dogs. Speaking of dogs, there's a good story about a dog who was relatively quiet most of the time. For about three or four nights straight at 3 a.m., began just barking and waking up the whole neighborhood. And the husband would get out of bed and couldn't find anything wrong. And so as a week came by, the dog, 3 a.m., just starts going crazy. The husband slips out the back door, goes around the alley, and finds his next door neighbor throwing rocks over the fence at his dog. And he said, "What are you doing? You're waking up the whole neighborhood. My wife's going crazy." And he said, I'm sorry, but my mother-in-law's here. And she said if she gets woke up one more time, she's leaving. He went back inside and back to bed. That's a good neighbor. This morning we'll talk just a little bit about neighbors, and I'll just give some TV neighbors. Dennis Domenis, of course, had the Wilsons. Darren and Samantha Stevens had Abner and Gladys Kravitz, but really Abner, he was really just a good husband. It was really Gladys that was causing the problems, but that's not why we're here either. Seinfeld had Kramer, Laverne and Shirley. They had Lenny and Squiggy. The Flintstones had the Rubbles, and we could go on and on and on. And it's not hard to tell at times, but sometimes you can have good neighbors. Sometimes you can have some not so good neighbors. But this morning we're talking about when Jesus was questioned by the lawyer, asking him who his neighbor was. One commentary I read implied that the question of who your neighbor was hotly debated in that day. The law commanded that the Israelites were to love their neighbor as yourself. And so as all good legalists will do, the lawyer wanted to know exactly who he had to love and who he didn't have to love. And the Jews typically interpreted your neighbor as someone who was near you or a fellow Jew. The men, like the teacher of the law, tended to regard people who weren't as religious as them as not their neighbor. Of course, we know of a whole sect that lived there along the Dead Sea who created the Dead Sea Scrolls. If you didn't live within that certain commune of people, they didn't consider you a neighbor. And so Jesus is answering a pretty broad question here with this man. This man is wanting Jesus to draw a circle. And he's wanting him to tell him who he should love, put those inside the circle, and those he doesn't have to on the outside. And so Jesus tells him a story. And I'm going to retell the story, but maybe better for our purposes today. I once read that this story would have been really highly offensive when Jesus told the story to the teacher of the law about the Good Samaritan. And so if we could imagine a modern day retelling of that, of someone from here going to Chicago for the weekend to see the sights. And while there, seeing the museums and going to the various restaurants, the man takes a tour of the city, and he comes around a corner and meets up with a gang of men who beat him, rob him, and leave him to dead in the alleys of Chicago. A minister who is on his way to a religious conference sees the man on the sidewalk, sees the blood, and knows that he can't go before a crowd of people with blood on his suit, but marks a place in his mind to remember to call 911 when he gets to the church to make sure that the man is taken care of. Conversely, right after that, a Sunday school teacher comes walking by and sees the man. He understands that this is a pretty rough neighborhood and doesn't want to get caught in any kind of skirmish. And so he moves along down the road as well. And then finally, a man who happens to own a bar, who doesn't believe in God, is a strong atheist, and whichever way you vote, he has found a way to vote just the opposite of you. He sees the man, but stops, doesn't worry about the blood or any of that, gently picks the man up, puts him in his back seat, drives him to the local emergency room, pays the man's bill at the emergency room, and leaves his number and says, if there's anything else I can do for this man, call me and let me know. And so the same question begs, who was the man's neighbor? As much as we don't want to like it, it was the atheist in this story. It was the man who showed compassion or mercy to the injured. And so of those three people, that's where we are. That's the kind of story that Jesus tells the teacher of the law in our story this morning. Jesus is teaching the man that his neighbor was anyone who is in need. And well, you might say, well, no one ever acts like that. No one would ever see anyone injured and just walk right past them. John Quiñones tells a good story that there's a whole TV show on ABC, What Would You Do? And he said sometimes it's difficult to air an episode because really the people that help are the exception to the rules. There are more people that walk by or ignore the situation than ever do. And I'm just the opposite. I'm so scared to be on that show that I always err on the side of caution. Back in 1985, a lady by the name of Carolyn Cooley in Sarasota, Florida, were taking her two daughters to church on a Sunday morning. And she was disgusted to find an unkempt man laying beneath one of the church's palm trees with beer cans littered all around him and his cap pulled over his eyes, seemingly asleep. Like I said, she was highly offended. She wasn't the only one in the congregation that was highly offended until that man got up behind the pulpit and gave his weekly Sunday sermon. Their minister had noticed a growing problem in the area of homeless people, and that was his way of bringing attention to the congregation. And so that left her feeling just a little bit sad, a little bit desperate that that would happen. And I've read illustration after illustration of people who have acted that same way. There's a story of a 45 or 55 year old man who fell down a manhole, and he was there 45 minutes before anyone helped him, but he was there less than 5 minutes before a crowd began to gather around to look at him at the bottom of the manhole. Another story would be told that someone was in a car accident just outside of Washington, D.C. And two motorists stopped to help the gentleman, but they didn't have cell phones, and so they were trying to wave down other passerbys to get a hold of a cell phone to call for help. What they got was a lot of honks and shouts and hand gestures. Someone even took the time to roll down their window and told them to get that heap out of the road so people could pass by. That heap was the man that they had let out of the front seat of the car and laid him there on the pavement. So, you know, it happens. People do get caught up in themselves. And so this morning we're going to look at just three things of why people don't necessarily know who their neighbor is. The guy lying on the pavement doesn't seem like a neighbor to me. He doesn't even live on the same block as me. He doesn't go to my church. He doesn't belong to my club or my social circle. You could say I just don't know the person. how could that person end up being my neighbor? Well, in the story of the Good Samaritan, neither the priest nor the Levite knows who the man is. But then again, the Samaritan doesn't know the man either. Several years ago, there was a news story about an incident where they were excavating a cave on a piece of land. And then an accident happened, and about 20 people were caved in under the dirt. One bystander had been there since almost the beginning, and he was watching the rescue attempts when his wife ran up to him and said, "Why aren't you doing anything? Your brother is down there." And immediately he stripped off his coat and he went to feverishly digging. Now, what changed for that man? Well, he became important to him when he knew someone was at the bottom that he knew. Then he wanted to do help. But maybe it helps to define who our neighbor is. Back in Leviticus 18, God describes your neighbor as someone that you know, or one of your people. A little bit later, he describes your neighbor as someone that you don't know, describing them in the ESV as the stranger living with you. I think some other versions say the foreign alien living among you. One of the things that pleases me about this congregation is how much that we attempt to help the needy. When someone comes with a need, this church does its best to help. We help mostly, I think, with an open invitation for people to come and to visit our services, to worship with us, that we can get to know them better in this setting and not just in a setting of personal need. And so we do. We try hard to help those in need. The first reason that people don't love their neighbor is that they don't know them. Maybe another reason is that they're afraid that they'll be taken advantage of. One of the comments I hear the most from people about giving to people that are in need is that they're just going to end up using that money for nefarious reasons, that they may spend it on alcohol or drugs. I can remember being with a friend out one time, and a man down on his luck asked if he could have a little bit of cash. And I gave it to him, and I just say that to say my friend let me know that he was going to use that to buy alcohol or drugs. And was my friend right? Probably. He's a pretty smart guy. But I say that to say, once you give, your part's kind of over. You can't tie yourself up in worrying about what's going to happen after you've made that decision to give. At some point, that floats over to the person that you have given to. But here, if there is a need for groceries, we have the pantry, and Jennifer even has boxes prepared that we can just hand a box to somebody when they are looking for a little bit of food. And usually, I have found that box surprises folks. They are more than thankful when they get that. If it's a need for gas, I'll try to get them down there to let them get a tank of gas. But we do all these things in the hopes that they remember that this church, that all of you all have given to them to help them out. And we hope that one day that they'll be here with us helping someone else get a leg up as well. You'll notice, though, that the Samaritan didn't give any money to the man that he helped. He goes to the innkeeper and tells him that if there are any other charges, that he will pay the difference when he gets back. I think when we try to help the poor, there may be times that we don't give them cash as help. But irregardless, God regards the command to love our neighbor as ourselves so important that he tells us that it's his royal law in his kingdom. James chapter 2, verse 8 says there that if we really fulfill the royal law according to Scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. You are doing well. In Proverbs, we're told there that whoever is generous to the poor is generous to the Lord, or lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his deed. God even talks about fasting as a way of freeing up money to help the poor. In Isaiah chapter 58, beginning in verse 6, there it's recorded that God promises that it is this, the fast that I choose, to house the... I'm having some contact issues, so bear with me here, folks. It is not the fast that I choose to have the bonds of wickedness, to undo the straps of the yoke, let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke. It is not to share your bread with the hungry and bring you home the homeless poor. Hey, does anybody have some readers? Steve's got some readers. This is not going to work. Boy, Steve. All right, Isaiah 58:6 tells us that God promises, is not this fast the one I choose to loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the straps of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free and break every yoke. It is not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house. When you see the naked, to cover him and not to hide yourself from your own flesh. Then shall your light break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up speedily. Your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. So God takes us loving our neighbor seriously. He takes it so seriously that when we do it, the Lord wants to reward us. So first, people don't love their neighbors because they don't see them as neighbors. Second, they don't love their neighbors because they're afraid of getting hurt or afraid of getting taken advantage of. And lastly, they don't love their neighbors. Really, it comes down to just being selfish. I'll often hear when someone quotes, "Love your neighbor as yourself," they add a little bit to it. They say, "Well, you have to love yourself first." Maybe you've heard someone say that. And it sounds good in a world that's consumed with loving themselves. But it's just not true. Jesus didn't say, "Love yourself so that you can love others." He said, "Love your neighbors as yourself," or "Love your neighbor as yourself." Love them in the same way that you love yourself. The Bible assumes that you love yourself. In fact, in Ephesians, we're told that husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one has ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church. The Bible says that when you love yourself, that is easily proved. Let's say that you walk into a room filled with people, and on the wall is a large mirror. You look in the mirror and see all the people in the room, but whose face do you look for first? It's your own. And I'm guessing you all were nodding. I don't have a clue. Or if you find a family photo in a desk drawer with you and your aunts and your uncles and your brothers and sisters, whose face is the first one you seek out? It's your own. You love yourself. Now, we may not be real happy with ourselves at the moment. We can be disappointed with something that we've done or said, or something that we haven't done or haven't said. But the point is that we love ourselves. The question is, aren't there people who don't love themselves? Well, yes and no. There are people who are depressed and who have a poor self-image. But really, the problem isn't that they don't love themselves. The problem is that their priorities are out of whack. They have a poor self-image really because it's a matter of being self-centered. If a person wants to heal their poor self-image, the Bible has a foolproof way to deal with that. And it's sort of like a doctor's prescription. And I'll guarantee you that if they do it God's way, they will begin to love themselves again. And that prescription is simply love your neighbor. Again, back in 1985, Bernard Rimblin was the director of the Institute for Child Behavior Research, and he did research on happiness. And among other things, he came up with this, that the happiest people are those that help others. I read another story of a woman who was suffering from bouts of depression, and she went to her preacher for help, and he counseled her for a while, and then he gave her an assignment. He listed various people in the congregation who needed visiting, and he asked her to go and visit them. And then he set an appointment for the next week. When she came back the next week, the woman was elated. She had found a sense of pleasure and self-worth from visiting people who had bigger problems than she did, and she said as much. But when the preacher pointed this out to her, that this was a way to deal with her depression, she suddenly frowned. "You mean I got to do this every week?" That was her answer. Well, earlier in the sermon, I told you about Carolyn Cooley from Sarasota, Florida, who had seen that vagrant on the church lawn. She was so overcome with shame by what she had experienced, about the attitudes that she had held back in 1985, she and her husband, Ray, decided to scrape together money to rent a house in Sarasota. And they used that home for the homeless, and they called it the Good Samaritan House. And for over 25 years now, they have pursued this. In 2001, they received the Florida's Points of Light Award for reaching out to the homeless. The Cooleys had found a new sense of self-worth and value before God. Jesus said, "Love your neighbor as yourself." If you obey this command, you please God enormously. But I want to close just with one more thought this morning. Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan. The priest and the Levite saw this man beaten and bleeding by the side of the road, and they passed by on the other side of the road. They couldn't be bothered with this man's tragedy. But the Samaritan, of course, was filled with pity and stopped to help the man in trouble. And you just think about that in the historical context. Just days, or maybe at most weeks after this encounter with the expert in the law, Jesus would be stripped of his clothes. He would be beaten within an inch of his life, and then he would be left to die on the cross. And he did all that, much like the Samaritan, willingly. He suffered and died on the cross for us. And he did this because he refused to walk by us. He refused to let us just die in our sins on the side of the road. Jesus had compassion on us. Jesus had mercy on us. And now still, he holds out that nail-scarred hand to bring you the healing that your soul desperately needs. This morning, if you are not a Christian, we urge you to do so today as together we stand and we sing. Thank you.